Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates is Robin Singh. Robin is the Compliance and Ethics Lead Officer for the health services company Sahad, which is the state-owned government health entity in Abu Dhabi. Robin, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you for having me, Adam. I appreciate it.
So, Robin, you're currently the lead for the Abu Dhabi government in the area of ethics, regulatory compliance programs, fraud, corruption investigations in this area. What does the position entail exactly?
Well, in the Abu Dhabi government, I work for a company called Saha. Saha is a health system operated by the government of Abu Dhabi, which consists of 12 hospitals, 2,600 plus beds, nearly about 20,000 employees, 60 plus clinics covering all specialties, may it be primary care, disease prevention, mobile, school clinic, blood banks, etc. That's the breadth of my role. As far as the depth of my role goes, I was hired with a few mandates, one of them to assist the management to develop a compliance and ethics program from scratch, which I'm very proud to say that we have done so based on the seven elements of the OIG framework given by Health and Human Resources, OHRS, in the United States. Since there aren't any local regulations available, we have to look at international standards. Second part being of my mandate was to establish a whistleblowing helpline across the jurisdiction, covering all our entities and assets. Again, we've done that with the help of a third-party provider for an external helpline. The third element being to develop a comprehensive training program to train employees, physicians, and healthcare professionals on regulations, policies, standard of conduct, and having a face-to-face as well as an electronic training part of it. Fourthly, was to establish a compliance infrastructure to put in place a monitoring mechanism to ensure that we can somehow control the risks that surround the healthcare entities, basically covering out to make sure there are no gifts given, annual declaration, conflict of interest, vendor sponsorship on those lines, and definitely the final one being to conduct any investigations and take it to prosecution in case they found there are serious crimes against the government.
Well, it's very, very comprehensive and interesting, you know, being both sort of a business entity and a governmental entity, the need to do compliance, but also being the enforcement, having the enforcement role. How did you end up in this position?
So Saha was looking out for a subject matter expert to assist them in setting up their compliance office, basically looking out for a professional who would have experience with regulatory compliance, data privacy, ethics, whistleblowing, fraud and corruption investigations, and the like. So that was one of my parts. Plus, they were looking for a person who would have very good qualifications, as I do as in the Master of Law in Studies from Northwestern Law, my Master's IT from Virginia Tech, and my Business Administration from SVJ in Mumbai. Besides this, I've always serviced out nearly Fortune 500 clients, government entities across various jurisdictions, such as UAE, Kuwait, Oman, Singapore, India, as well as high-risk jurisdictions such as Afghanistan. And I'm very happy to say that I've recently been awarded amongst the top 50 healthcare professional leaders across the Middle East in healthcare domain for my efforts in ethics, compliance, and investigation. So I guess all of these amalgamation of everything got me to this position.
Well, congratulations on that. That's quite the honor. So, what are some of the key compliance issues that companies need to think about when doing business in the UAE and the Gulf States region?
Well, it's a very big question. So, in fact, there is no cookie cutter approach that one can apply to identify all risks. Even though all these Gulf regions cumulatively they are called as GCC. Which is Gulf Corporation Council, which are the countries. They belong to the same roots. However, the risks are country dependent. So my top five pick, which I would generalize across the region, would be first to pay due consideration to the political scenario. I mean, everybody understands that UAE and the other Gulf states are collectively very stable when it comes to political environment. However, the political environment is very young, and this gives businesses the opportunity to make returns. But it carries a high risk that the regulatory environment is still building up. So basically, high risk and high returns. The second aspect is to keep an eye out on the microeconomic factors, which can have a macroeconomic impact. When I say of microeconomic factors, I mean the oil and gas sector, which funds the economy across the region. And the fluctuation in oil prices sends out tremors across the sectors here. So it doesn't even give you time to repair yourself, but or optimize your expenditure. You just got to make sure that you're cutting your manpower size at the end of the day, if that fluctuates. But at the end of the day, because of that fluctuation, it also impacts the payment for poor vendors who are a small-time company, and sometimes the fluctuation could wipe off your capital as well. The third element that I would say is that to understand and accept the cultural nuances. The lines are very much grayed out over here when you speak of personal and professional relationships. It's unlike the Western world that you would see wherein come what may situation, wherein you would have a task and you would just go ahead. Over here in the Middle East and the Gulf region, people tend to work on cultural timeline. Like for instance, the holy month of Ramadan, that moves the Western calendar from January to December because the Ramadan keeps on moving every 10 days. And similarly, the prayer time. So you got to accept all of this. In addition to this, the optics of how you do things is very important here. People in the Middle East are a part of a honor culture. So their viewpoint is that a person's worth is directly proportional to their reputation. And their reputation is a function of how others perceive them to be. So that's a critical one. Fourthly and fifthly, which cumulatively I would join, is because of the so many expatriates in this region, the cultural diversity, the cultural norms of giving gifts, business entertainment. It brews the risk of conflict of interest and third-party risk. Conflict of interest in this region can be pushed beyond boundaries and can lead to risk of bribery, corruption, kickbacks. Third parties over here are all there to taking advantage of the current loopholes in the system, lack of policies or regulation to make sure that they can get their bite of share in. Just to finish it off, I remember that Ernst & Young had carried out a survey about 2-3 years back. And one of the results was that 1/5 of the survey respondents said that you need to find out an alternative routes in order to do business here. Competition might not just be answer, even though there are various regulations internationally which guide them to do that. So these would be my top 5 picks for and companies to look out for.
Well, that's definitely something to look forward to, but I think one of them, the great concern for reputation, I think would be in some ways a compliance asset, knowing that people are keenly aware of potential reputational damage. Where do you see typically companies and their employees making mistakes when it comes to their compliance and ethics efforts?
Well, I would say that there are a plethora of areas that you can find for such things. But again, I mean, looking at the paucity of time, I think I would just try to highlight the core ones. And the core one for me would be to have your multi-management commitment, not just the top management, to make sure that you don't fall apart in the middle management as well, because the grapevine is very strong. And so if you get incorrect, inconsistent messages, it can virtually destroy your compliance program. Secondly, I would say, because investigations are a big part of my role, I see that sometimes across the region, you know, sanctions aren't applied consistently. They are basically, sanctions should be applied on individual based on their misconduct, unethical act. But it should not change based on the stature of the person. Cultural nuances over here allow people to do that because they use this term called WASCA, which means that they are looking to be get connected and they can get them ahead of the queue. So this is something that creates an inconsistent manner of sanctions, and again, which can disrupt the compliance and ethics efforts. Thirdly, I would say is that not allowing functions, those who want to shine out, to bypass compliance, ethics, and policies. There are a lot of things that happen that come directly from the outside councils. They come from the top management. They have their own confidants, and they would want to do their own work quickly and respond to management in order to shine. And in turn, what happens is that some of the key issues could be dealt with without the presence of compliance, without realizing that how important compliance could do or be there for them. And at the end, they would come to know when there would be some sort of a reputational damage, or it would go to the court of law, or there's a legal claim against that entity. Finally, there's the last bit of, I would say, would be the things can wait attitude. You know, I mean, compliance programs need to be constantly updated based on the regulations, doing risk assessment. But when you look at factors such as budgets and other elements on not getting approval, you know, decimating the core essence of updating a compliance program, it creates a big problem. Similarly with the regulations. So regulations come out in local languages first, as they always do, but translating Arabic to English isn't a good part. So you need to wait for it. Again, it all does not allow the compliance program to be updated regularly. And that is, again, a big part. So these would be my top five picks for now.
Well, there's certainly significant risks. Now, let's just, in the little bit of time, we have about 2 minutes left that we have, drill down on the issue of investigations, where you mentioned you've done a lot of work and it can be a risky area. Any advice on how to conduct investigations most effectively in the region?
Yep, sure. So first and foremost, I believe so that you as an investigator need to safeguard the whistleblower. And there aren't any laws over here which would safeguard them, unlike the Whistleblower Protection Act or the key thumb provision in the False Claim Act. Nothing of those exists. This brews a culture of fear and basically destroys the compliance element of speak up culture. And that's a very big problem over here. So you shouldn't be surprised if you see a whistleblower being sued or being imprisoned, because there is a section under the Article 371 in the Law Number 3, which looks at more of complaints coming out to destroy reputation of individuals. So whistleblower doesn't have any support. However, now Kuwait, UAE, and other countries are ratifying themselves with the United Nations Convention Against Corruption. It might change. The other element that I would say is the right to privacy is very limiting, and in some cases overreaching. So as an investigator, you need to be very clear as to where you stand, because there aren't any GDPRs or the California's Consumer Protection Act here. So there are some which protect the local citizens, like the Constitution, Article 31. There are other cybercrime laws, which are the Federal Law Number 5, which looks at piercing the corporate veil by making sure that they look at individuals as well, not just corporations. Or on the other hand, look at privacy of individuals, but they limit themselves to eavesdropping and having consents before photographing images. Lastly, I would say would be the before you interview, you make sure that you have the consent of the individual, because generally what investigators tend to do is they would start recording, ask for a consent later. And that would be, in fact, a criminal offense, because it would be regarded as a covert recording against the Article 378 of the Penal Code. Lastly, I would say that the environment, the regulatory landscape has been changing here. So victims can make a claim against the claims of fraud, misconduct in line with the Penal Code. And this is going to help them, an organization, to grow better, to protect the whistleblowers, and ensure, make sure that it's not only the corporation which is punished, but the individuals who are doing that crime.
That's great. Well, thank you for all that advice. I think there's a lot there for people to think about and to act on. Well, Robin, thank you. This is an evening call for you. I appreciate you taking time out of the evening to talk to us. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen tonight. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and ATCA, saying I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.
Thank you very much, Adam.